At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's higher than Robinhood, SoFi, Wealthfront, Capital One, and the big banks, too. Ready to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash? Check out the high-yield cash account on Public.com. This is paid for by Public Investing. 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
You wanted the job, you got the job, the goods and the bads, and day two starts with more of the bads. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdal. It is Thursday today, the 21st day of January. Good as always to have you along, everybody. Yes, we know that President Biden knew well what he was in for, but it has still got to be tough when first thing on your first full day, the labor market pokes you right in the eye. It's Thursday, so today was weekly unemployment claims day. 900,000 people asked for state unemployment assistance for the first time. That is down just a little bit from a week ago, so good, but still monumentally high. And then claims for the newly reinstated federal program for gig workers shot up more than 48%. Nearly 424,000 people lost jobs in the gig economy, the jobs a lot of people turn to when they run out of options. Marketplace's Erica Barris gets us going with that.
When last year's shutdown started, Joy Choudhury, an Uber driver in New York City, was in a bind. There wasn't work.
I was struggling to pay my rent.
As a gig worker, Choudhury didn't qualify for typical unemployment benefits, not until Congress passed its first relief package. This latest spike in pandemic unemployment claims is likely linked to the lapse in the program before the last aid package was approved, new shutdowns, and to the after-holiday slowdown, according to Dimitri Kustas, an economist at the University of Chicago. About a third of the labor force does some work in the gig economy.
And if more people are relying on gig work, a lot of the risk is on the workers themselves.
That's because, according to Aaron Hatton, a sociologist at the University of Buffalo,
we've attached a whole bunch of rights and privileges and opportunities to employment.
Retirement plans, parental leave, health insurance, unemployment are tied to traditional full-time jobs. And Heidi Shierholz, a labor economist at the Economic Policy Institute, says that was problematic before. But with the pandemic,
it's really shown us that there are gaps in our regular unemployment system that you can drive a truck through. We do have the ability to close them. The existence of this program shows us that we can do it.
Josh Godfrey in Houston, Texas, knows this well. His DoorDash earnings dropped from $600 to $150 a week. Without the temporary gig unemployment benefits, he doesn't know what he would have done.
The pandemic has kind of pushed me to kind of reevaluate what I'm doing in life.
So he's going back to school to get a job that if he does lose, he'd get unemployment benefits. I'm Erica Barris for Marketplace.
Kind of a wash in equities today. Tech did all right, if you're curious. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. Yeah, There's going to be a period of time in the Biden administration that might well be called the Great Undoing, putting a pause on or reversing a lot of what the previous occupant of the White House did. Thus, today, another round of executive orders and actions and memoranda and guidance, a lot of them tied to the pandemic. More help for state and local governments, including safely reopening schools, better collection and sharing of pandemic data, and how the administration plans to use the Defense Production Act. And at the same time, President Biden has rejoined the Paris Climate Accord and is revoking permits for the Keystone XL pipeline. So on the theory that there is going to be more of the same coming, Marketplace's Kimberly Adams explains what's in a new president's toolbox.
A new administration can make significant policy changes on day one because of how modern presidents tend to get stuff done. Rather than asking Congress to go along with what they want, presidents use executive agencies they control. And former President Donald Trump really leaned into this strategy. Aaron Klein is a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution.
A lot of his legacy is through executive action and regulatory choices, and that empowers the new Biden administration to undo many of Trump's policies.
Making some changes is as simple as signing a document, but changing actual regulations can be a bit harder. One way to do it is with the Congressional Review Act.
What it does is it gives the new administration and the Congress 60 in-session days where they can give directive on a rule that needs to be rolled back.
Nikitra Bailey is a vice president at the Center for Responsible Lending. Her group felt the sting of the Congressional Review Act in 2017 when a brand new Trump administration used it to overturn a regulation limiting forced arbitration.
They actually rescinded it through CRA and literally prohibited kind of class action lawsuits.
Now the group is pushing to use the CRA to overturn several Trump-era rules. Another way an administration can change policy is to let outside groups do it for them in court.
These two regulations that we're suing about right now, it is important to know that they just went into effect.
Nick Fish is president of American Atheists and is working with other groups to overturn rules about religious influence in social services and at universities.
Groups like us are out there making sure that any of these changes that the Trump administration tried to jam through in the last few minutes here can be rolled back using these lawsuits.
Fish says the Biden administration can choose not to fight on behalf of Trump administration rules, making the job for his side's lawyers potentially a bit easier. In Washington, I'm Kimberly Adams for Marketplace.
Back in December, when then-President-elect Biden announced he was nominating former Fed chair and former head of the Council of Economic Advisers, Janet Yellen, to be Secretary of the Treasury, he made a little joke.
We might have to ask Lin-Manuel Miranda, who wrote the musical about the first Secretary of Treasury, Hamilton, to write another musical about the first woman Secretary of the Treasury, Yellen. So that's what I'm working on right now, Janet.
Well, we beat him to it. We don't know Lin-Manuel Miranda, but we do know a musician who's on the Hamilton mixtape.
Alexander.
And who's been on this program a couple of times talking about making music in this economy.
Even before the pandemic, like the alchemy of turning music into groceries had gotten really complicated.
The rapper and songwriter, Dessa. So we gave her a call.
Hello.
Hey, how are you?
Hey, how's it going?
Good, 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 good. We're just going to climb right in, okay?
Okay, let's do it.
Okay, good. So we called you up and we said, hey, write a thing about Janet Yellen. And you said what?
I said, when is it due, man? And it turns out we could just barely pull it off. So I called up a couple of my collaborators, Andy Thompson and Laserbeak, and said, is there any chance we can fast track this? And they were both like, let's roll.
That's awesome. That's awesome. All right. So I want to listen to this thing. Full confession. I've heard it before. I love it. But I want to play it for everybody. And then we're going to come back. So here we go.
Oh, who's yelling?
on the left, hawks on the right, crosstalk in the flock, trying to fight mid-flight. But here comes yelling with that inside voice. Never mind the mild manner, policies make noise. She's 5 foot nothing, but hands are God. She could pop a collar, she could rock a power bob. Bay Ridge represent, Brooklyn's in the cabinet. Damn, Janet, go and get it, fifth in line for president. She knows the kind of stimulus it takes to pass the
I heard
block.
She called the house in crisis.
She's qualified. It only took a couple centuries, the first female secretary of the treasury.
Don't want no tax evasion for just faking in the treasury. Trying for higher wages for the nation, less disparity.
Watch your step, there's busted glass. Janet broke another ceiling, you can bet your brass that the Lego guy is leaving, last check to cash.
Excuse me, Janet has a briefing and a flight to catch.
And Janet, she's the first that's led the Council of Economic Advisors, treasuring the Fed. She needs a three-sided coin that always comes up heads to put the triple crown down when she goes to bed. Call the decorators, new boss in the office. Vendors and the savers, watch the confirmation process. We got to meet her, now let's let her settle in. And lift up your mojitos,
cause she manages the mint.
I cannot tell you how much I love that, and I wish it, I wish it had been my idea to call you, but it wasn't. So look, I want to take this apart a little bit. It starts right in with Federal Reserve monetary policy lingo with hawks and doves. Before we asked you to do this, were you a follower of fiscal and monetary policy?
I want to say like, oh, it's easy. I just sat down. But no, I watched a lot of like, you know, Khan Academy. And I did. There was a lot of interneting for sure. Yeah,
no, I bet. All right. So that was how it begins. I want to play one other little bit. Well, a bunch of other little bits, because this is one of those that goes by you really fast. So we got to take it apart a little bit. Let's play that first bit, Charlton. Let's hit it.
She's 5 foot nothing, but hands are God. She could pop a collar. She could rock a power bob. Bay Ridge represent. Brooklyn's in the cabinet.
Can't beat that, right? She is 5 foot nothing. She can rock a bob, right? The haircut, popping the collar, and then the Brooklyn thing. I mean, you listen to this woman talk, you know she's from Brooklyn, right?
Man, and like the collar's a big deal. Like,
yes.
I spent a lot of time like listening to her old speeches and also just flipping through photos. Like, her height, you know, was in the news a lot a couple of years ago because of the rumor that Trump had passed her over for the gig based on that. Totally irrelevant piece of information. So it was particularly exciting to make that like a point of victory in this tune. Yeah,
absolutely. Another thing about Janet Yellen, which has been pointed out many times in her nomination and confirmation process, is this next little bit here. Let's hit that.
Janet, she's the first that's led the Council of Economic Advisors, treasuring the Fed. She needs a three-sided coin that always comes up heads to put the triple crown down when she goes to bed.
I'm sorry, three-sided coin to put the triple crown down? Come on, that is so good. That is so good. All right, so we have to be honest with listeners here, right? Like a week ago, as I imagine you were putting the finishing touches on this thing, you DM'd me and you said, hey, it's really hard to get Council of Economic Advisors to rhyme with anything. Can I just say CEA instead? And I said, yeah, sure. Marketplace's audience will get that. But you crammed it in there, and I want to know how you sort of came up with Council of Economic Advisors, Treasury, and the Fed. I mean, that's like a whole lot of syllables.
Oh, man. I mean, a lot of times it's just like repeating something and then shifting it left or right in time. So Council of Economic Advisors, Treasury, and the Fed, like if you kind of put a triplety spin on it, you can kind of get it in before the next line comes.
Yeah, well, that's why you do what you do and I do what I do. okay, last one. Here we go. Let's hit this last one.
Call the decorators, new boss in the office. Vendors and the savers, watch the confirmation process. We got to meet her, now let's let her settle in. And lift up your mojitos, cause she manages the mint.
Lift up your mojitos, cause she manages the mint. Come on. Come on.
I gotta say, like, the three of us who worked on this song, Laser Beak and Andy and I don't think we've ever had so much fun. It was like, how do we get out of this normal rap game and into this appointment niche? Because it was so much fun to write.
It's so cool. How did you think about it when you guys sat down to do this?
Yeah, well, to be totally frank with you, I mean, I'd known Yellen's name from the news, right? But I read a lot about her to make sure that it was somebody who I'd like to send up, if that makes sense. And it was really exciting to become a fan of Janet Yellen. You know, I think all three of us, like, we're just really stoked about her. I'm really excited about the appointment. And then, from the musician side, I think both Andy Thompson and Laserbeak, like, put another ear on the Hamilton mixtape, shout out Lynn,
yeah.
to you know, to just kind of remind themselves about how that particular piece of music was put together and nod to it as best we could.
Yeah. Well, look, I am a fan of the Hamilton mixtape and of Hamilton the show and of you. And, you know, for my money, this kind of fits in of a piece. I'm just saying.
Thanks, man. Thanks.
So what got left out? Was there anything left on the cutting room floor?
Yeah, God, absolutely. Oh, my gosh. I mean, there's a lot about interest rates. And, you know, I was kind of going down a wormhole with a couple of economic friends. Just, like, talk to me about quantitative easing one more time. I wanted that phrase in there so bad. I know. But I think we ended with the 90 seconds that we were proudest of. So.
No, it's awesome. It's awesome. Dessa, she's been on the show a bunch of times. She's got a new single out. It's called Rome, right? Is it called Rome?
Yep.
Yeah. And now, of course, the work for which she will be known, this little riff on Janet Yellen. I'm just saying, it's kind of awesome. You can hear, actually, we should say, again, you can hear her, Dessa, on the Hamilton mixtape. Listen, I appreciate you doing this. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for having us, Guy.
If you want to hear that song again, and I know you do, and you maybe want to take a closer look at the lyrics while you're at it, you could do that at marketplace.org. I've been doing this show a long time. That might be my favorite bit ever, ever. Coming up.
Pharmaceutical products from China are not very accepted by the global market.
China is trying to change that, though, with its corona vaccine. But first, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrials, down 12 points today, less than a 10%, 31,176. The NASDAQ gained 73 points, about a half percent, 13,530. The S&P 500 basically flat, 38.53 there. Apple sweetened 3.6% today after an analyst at Morgan Stanley said she expects the tech giant to have record results when it posts fourth quarter figures next week. Not a surprise with that company, right? Other big tech firms reporting next week are Microsoft up 0.2% today, Facebook up 2% on the day on this Thursday. The pandemic, it turns out, did not hamper the productivity of the 116th Congress, the one that just ended. According to a new report from Pew, the post-election session that ended on January 3rd was more legislatively productive than any post-election session in the past five decades. More than 4 out of 10 bills became law in the Congress, were passed in its final 2 months, which is kind of amazing. You're listening to Marketplace. This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. The Transportation Security Administration screened 542,000 people yesterday. That's down from 1.8 million a year ago. So what I'm about to say next will come as no surprise. United Airlines has reported a fourth quarter loss of almost $2 billion, more than $7 billion in the red for the full year. You're looking for uncertainty in this economy? Airlines are pretty much the case study. Marketplace's Andy Euler is on the aviation desk today.
United said it expects total operating revenue in the first quarter of this year to be down 65 to 70% from the same time 2 years ago, which means the airline has to make a number of short-term decisions right now to stay afloat. Industry consultant Michael Boyd says United's trying to be as nimble as it can, but with airlines?
That means they're moving the transom of the Titanic a little quicker than somebody else.
He says the biggest challenge for the whole industry is to cut losses quickly.
The idea being, we'll try something, but if it doesn't work, we get the hell out and try something different.
Nobody really knows when demand for flights will return to what it was before the pandemic, or if it ever will. Some are hopeful we'll return to 2019 levels later this year. Others say 2023 or 2024 is more realistic.
You can think of this as a game of survival.
Samuel Angle is an aviation consultant at ICF. He says when the industry has seen downturns in the past, two things have been consistently true.
When travel demand returns after a slump, it returns faster than people think. And periods of capacity reduction in the industry lead to greater profitability for the survivors.
United said it's looking to permanently slash $2 billion from its annual expenses, which could mean fewer planes and personnel. What worries Henry Hartevelt, travel industry analyst at Atmospheric Research Group, is that major airlines could make decisions without the passenger in mind.
Will they invest in products and services
that the passengers like and will pay for, or cram more seats onto their planes? Will they strip away the things that distinguish them from budget airlines?
Just some of the uncertainties facing airlines and passengers as COVID-19 continues to rattle the industry. I'm Andy Euler for Marketplace.
Tomorrow morning, nice and early, David Brancaccio and the gang on the Marketplace Morning Report. Everything you need to know to start your economic day. Among the executive orders President Biden signed yesterday was one to get the United States back into the World Health Organization, as a part of which the U.S. is going to join a global push to get coronavirus vaccines to low-income countries. That's a big turnaround for this country, given how the pandemic has been handled here and, until yesterday, our not entirely cooperative global vaccine policies. China, meanwhile, has been promoting its vaccines around the world, most recently to Brazil, where more than 200,000 people have died, and vaccinations started this week. As Marketplace's Scott Tong reports, there is some opportunity, but also some risk for Beijing in all this.
The Chinese vaccine is going to Brazil as health systems there are collapsing. Reports from the vast state of Amazonas say some COVID patients are dying of asphyxiation.
They don't have oxygen in the hospitals.
Dr. Adriano Masuda in Sao Paulo is a former Brazilian health official.
Not only for COVID, but also for babies. So the government needs to transport babies for other states.
He blames the cases largely on President Jair Bolsonaro, who, and this may sound familiar, has consistently undermined the advice of public health leaders.
And the president said, this could hurt our economy, so we can't maintain this orientation from the Minister of Health. So he changed the minister.
On Sunday, Brazil authorized a Chinese vaccine from the drug maker Sinovac. In fact, Sinovac tested its product there. Since the virus was spreading quickly in Brazil, it was easy to test if the vaccine could prevent it. Whereas in China, there was not enough disease for drug trials, says Jennifer Bui, a China researcher at the RAND Corporation think tank.
Since they don't have that many COVID patients, they have to work with other countries. So I think that helps with the transparency and the validation of their trials.
It's a chance for Sinovac to shine around the world. And Bui says a successful COVID vaccine campaign could catapult China's still developing pharmaceutical industry to global relevance.
Pharmaceutical products from China are not very accepted by the global market, but COVID-19 might be a game changer there.
For China's industry and for China's geopolitical efforts to win friends. At the Center for Strategic and International Studies, Southeast Asia fellow Greg Poling notes that Beijing has just agreed to ship vaccines to its neighbor Myanmar.
And at the same time, they announced that they're going to restart work on what's called the China-Myanmar Economic Corridor. Nobody comes out and says, we're going to give you vaccines so you greenlight this construction, but it's awfully coincidental.
He says China employed the same strategy when it shared masks and other PPE to the world last year.
And they were rather heavy-handed about the political strings attached, right? Demanding photo ops with leaders and statements of gratitude.
The Chinese vaccine charm offensive is not a sure winner, though. In Brazil, international relations professor Oliver Stunkel at the University FGV says President Bolsonaro tends to bash all things China.
The president has tried to promote an anti-Chinese sentiment, suggesting that, you know, China is not transparent, that you cannot trust the Chinese vaccine.
It didn't help that Brazilian science leaders seemed to botch the announcement of the Sinovac vaccine. In early January, they deemed it 78% effective. And then a week later, 50.
A lot of people I have spoken to say that they'd much rather prefer to take another vaccine, ideally from the United States or from Great Britain or from Germany, and they'd like to avoid having to take the Chinese vaccine.
Brazilian officials insist that the Chinese vaccine is highly preventive against severe COVID cases, and the numbers seem to back that up. But the whole drama is damaging the China brand. Alexander Phelan teaches global health at Georgetown.
China is obviously facing a bit of an uphill battle in many countries because of perceptions and realities about how the outbreak was handled in the early days. and that flowing on into how these vaccines are perceived.
If things don't go well for the Sinovac vaccine, if it's rejected by people in Brazil or found ineffective, that doesn't just hurt China and its companies. Phelan says Chinese vaccine skepticism could hurt the world's effort to end this pandemic. I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
This final note on the way out, a federal judge said today, she is not going to force Amazon to start hosting the far right-wing social media site Parler on its servers again. Parler, you might recall, had been a key player in the spread of conspiracies and lies and disinformation that led up to the attack on the Capitol on 6 January. Amazon booted it the following weekend, calling it, and this is a quote, a very real risk to public safety. Parler sued, and today the judge ruled against him, saying Parler's allegations at this time are both inaccurate and unsupported and are disputed by evidence submitted by Amazon. All right, we got to go. But here is your Thursday moment of economic context. Erica talked about gig workers out of work in this economy at the top of the show. Here is the big unemployment picture from that same report Erica was telling us about. 15.9 million people, basically 10% of the entire American labor force, are on some kind of government unemployment assistance right now. Amir Bibawi, Siobhan Brett, John Buckley, Eve Epstein, John Gordon, Kat Green, Rick Carr, and Betsy Streisand are the Marketplace editing staff. Do me a favor, check out that DESA thing. It's on our website, marketplace.org. It's so good. It's so good. I'm Kai Rizdal. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.